This week on the Nittany Dispatch, we discuss National Signing Day and Tom Allen as Penn State's new defensive coordinator. This week on the Nittany Dispatch. Hello and welcome to the Nittany Dispatch. I am John Sauber, Penn State football writer at Center Daily Times. She is Audrey Snyder, covering Penn State football for The Athletic. And we, much to some people's chagrin, I guess, are tired. It's been a very long National Signing Day.
Yeah, apparently that's, you know, it's been a long National Signing Day, part of a long, busy month. But John, kind of the theme, I think, for James Franklin, he said it last Friday at Bowl Media Day. He said it again Wednesday. They are an under-promise, over-deliver program, which feels like a lot like us here at the Nittany Dispatch.
Listen, that's my whole life, is under promise, over deliver.
Yeah, we're not promising a lot on this one today. There is a lot to get into.
Yes, there is.
It's been a long day. Penn State started with seven. Well, the live stream went up at 7 a.m., but 7:15 a.m. First commitment came rolling in. That rolled on for about 4 hours. Then we heard from James Franklin later today. They introduced Tom Allen, AD Pat Kraft talk. There was a lot.
If we're going sequential, it was a 7 a.m. show, ends at like noon. Then we talked to Pat Kraft at 1:30. Then we talked to James at about 2:15. And then some of the recruiting staff, including recruiting coordinators, Terry Smith and Marcus Higgins, obviously cornerbacks and wide receivers coach, respectively. And then closing it out with a Tom Allen introductory press conference. And then you and I have been writing for a while, which is why we're recording so late tonight. But it has been quite the day. We'll get into everything, but before we do that, don't forget to rate, review, subscribe to the podcast at Apple Podcasts. Hit that subscribe and like button down below if you're watching on YouTube. That always helps us out. Leave those 5-star ratings on Apple Podcasts, like I said. But this is a lot, right? Like we're 10 days away from the Peach Bowl, which it feels like it's getting lost in this. Because there have been two coordinator searches.
Not so fast. Yeah.
just the one defense.
Poor guy gets introduced and you're ready to run him out of town.
We had National Signing Day today too. And I think that's probably the best point to start, because this was drama free. It was, I think, for the staff, clearly pretty relaxing. They had 25 commits and they had 25 signatures, with 16 of those guys enrolling in like 3 weeks.
Yeah, that's to me the really impressive part about today. Yeah, 25 person class, which is massive, right? But no drama, right? And I always look when the war room starts, how many slots are on the board? 25 slots, 25 signees, no surprises, no decommitments, which is, I think, also speaks to the class and the fact that you've had two coordinator changes here in the last month and players weren't wavering, right? Like, that's a testament to committing to the program, committing to the school, the university, but also I think to the leaders in that class for keeping this thing afloat. And Cooper Cousins is certainly one of those guys. But yeah, getting 16 players here in January is significant. And I think, you know, we've kind of seen the numbers rise since James Franklin's been here. We've also seen the last few years, especially Penn State has been able to get players here in May with that May semester. There's so much value in getting guys here. Now, granted, some of it will not matter in terms of, especially you get some of your linemen here. It takes time to grow and develop, but you're getting them with Chuck Losey and this strength staff now. You're going to get to go through spring ball as opposed to having to wait the fall camp. You're going to get inside this new playbook, which we know for the offense, that's all going to hit after the Peach Bowl. So yeah, 16 early enrollees, significant number. I know I've got the full list up on The Athletic. Really no surprises there. I think one thing fans have to keep in mind is that not every school allows for early enrollment. So that's kind of the other challenge that a lot of guys have to work through. But yeah, John, I think kind of my other initial impression about this class, I guess I can have two initial impressions, I guess. Guess that's allowed. We have no rules.
That's not allowed.
Yeah, we have no rules. But the fact that you've got a lot of versatility, I think that's kind of the one thing. You look at a guy like Liam Andrews, highly coveted offensive lineman. He's going to be a defensive tackle here, and James Franklin outlined that process for us today. You look at Cooper Cousins. James Franklin said they believe Cousins could play all 5 spots up front on the offensive line. That's insane. And I think Quentin Martin is somebody that they talked a lot about today of, hey, he maybe can help us catching passes, which we know there's the running backs have to do that, right? You got to be able to do that. But I think also maybe that's kind of an early path to get him on the field. So to me, the versatility piece today was really huge too.
Yeah, no, and I think you nailed it with especially someone like Liam Andrews, who's such a big get for them because we've seen in years past, this is seemingly, is off the top of my head anyways, the one position where they struggle to get guys consistently.
Yeah.
Right? Like they have a hard time getting the top 125, 150 guys at defensive tackle. And Andrews is that. He's going to come in. He's pretty clearly a defensive tackle and should be able to get there long term. Frankly, like T.A. Cunningham also has the size to be a defensive tackle. We'll see
which direction one. That goes in.
Yeah, he's like 6'6", 275. He's massive. Should be a defensive tackle long term too, I would think. But getting those kind of guys is really big for them because they need the guys that can come in and do it right away. Because so often you see – so high-end defensive tackle recruits, part of, I think, what makes them so good is they're more physically developed. Mm-hmm. They're closer to that 285, 290-pound range.
Are we going to have a they're-not-big-enough discussion, John? Is that worth it? Don't tell me that's where this headed. Okay.
I mean, high school defensive tackles aren't. They're usually like much smaller.
Yeah, yeah.
The same thing is true on the offensive line, though, and James mentioned that they have a couple guys that they think are true offensive tackles. Mm-hmm. You know, Garrett Sexton is 6'7", Egan Boyer is 6'7", both very long, but again, both like small for an offensive tackle because 250 pounds in high school is a massive offensive lineman. In college, it's tiny. And so two more guys that while they should be offensive tackles long term, they're just not going to make an impact. I'd be surprised if either guy makes an impact in the first 2 years. They got to be in the strength program. They got to get there. But I do think they have so many of these guys that it's the prototypical body type that they want, right? Along the defensive line and the offensive line that I think they – you mentioned the versatility. I think they just nailed the trenches too, which I've said this before and I'll say it again. I'm an Eagles fan. Like this is, I am a firm believer and this is how you build a program is through the trenches and they need to continue to build on what has been a good offensive line the last 2 years. Now they need to continue to make sure that's the case and then eventually get it to being a great offensive line consistently.
Yeah. And I do think they capitalized on that, right? Because to me, Penn State, so much of their pitch this year and it will be next year and probably in the coming years should be, hey, look at Olu Fashanu. Right? Like, look what we're able to do with this guy. You know, this was somebody who, when he came here, was a bit of a project, you know? And so that's a really massive feather in Phil Troutwine's cap. But I also think, because you mentioned Liam Andrews, and I wanted to make sure we hit on the most important thing to know about Liam Andrews. If you caught it during the signing day live stream.
Yeah, whatever.
You know, he's apparently a Packers fan. And there's, as we know, John, there's a lot of them around here, the Real America's team. Garrett Sexton, of course, from Wisconsin, is a Packers fan. I enjoyed chatting with him about the struggles of our Packers during his recruitment. But I wanted to make sure we got that in there because I did not know that about Liam Andrews. And now that's going to be when we get to talk to him here in another like year and a half. That'll be my go-to.
Listen, everybody has their flaws. Go Birds. But no, I think, you know, you mentioned someone else too that I wanted to touch on real quick and Quentin Martin. Yeah. I don't know that he's going to line up at receiver frequently, but I would suspect that they're going to try and get him on the field early, right? That Catron Allen and Nick Singleton, though, are going to be RB1 and RB2 in some order, or RB1 and a half for both of them, maybe, I'm sure we will hear at some point based on how much work they do to make sure those guys, those guys know that they're on level playing field, which they are. Like, I don't think there's a need to necessarily push that messaging as often as they do, but I think Quentin Martin is going to find himself involved in the backfield at some point, assuming he's healthy, assuming he assimilates perfectly to not perfectly, but assimilates well to college life and everything, because he's too good to not have on the field quickly, right? Like we're seeing that Andy Kodonicki is going to want to run the ball based on the film that I've watched, and you know, everything that everyone has seen. Like they're going to want to run the ball. If you have three guys consistently that you can do it, that's not to discount the freshman that came in last year. I know Wanda Montgomery recovered from the ACL and everything, but like this is Quentin Martin's a different level of recruit, right? Like he is someone that, you make plans around. And I think that he's going to have a chance to come in and make an impact right away, which, you know, I talked to Ryan Snyder of On3 about this for a story on centerdaily.com. Ryan is always fantastic.
No relation to me, to be clear.
That's
right. Great guy, but no relation to me.
Very, very common last name, if we're being honest. But the early impact guys maybe aren't there this year just because you know, it's someone like Luke Reynolds. It's like, oh yeah, he's a really good tight end, but he's got to bulk up and he's in, going into a really deep room. It's like, oh, Quentin Martin can play right away.
Well, and we got to see with that room, John. We still don't know with Tyler Warren, but
even I think if Tyler Warren moves on, I think you have a pretty set, like my expectation would be that we see a lot of Khalil Dinkins and we see a lot of Andrew Rapoport, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think those are the two guys next year.
Yeah. Ahead of Schlaffer, Cross for sure. Yeah.
I could see Cross. That. I think would work in, like, I think he would, there's a chance that he would be.
If he can stay healthy and.
Yeah. Right. And like, I think all the talent is there. It's just like you mentioned, it's the health, the health piece. But I think with Reynolds, it's like he's got to get bigger and he's got to block because all these tight ends come in and they played receiver essentially in high school.
Yes.
Right? Like, and so I think Reynolds got to block.
Yes.
Yeah. And so I would be surprised if he's coming in making a massive impact right away. Andrews, like we said, he's still got to add weight. Gronkmeyer at quarterback. Ethan is I think he's really good, but Drew Haller is the starting quarterback. That is not going to change.
No, right? No, like, surprises is, there. Gronkmeyer will get here in January though, which is beneficial for sure.
Right. And so you have all these guys though at all these positions that maybe, you know, it's just not going to, the timing isn't right for them to step in right away. And the positions where maybe they have that need, wide receiver, corner, like I don't think any of those receivers are necessarily playing early next year.
I'm with you on that.
I think either guy like Antoine Belgrave Shorter or John Mitchell, I think they could be in the rotation. They could, like, you know, see like 200 snaps by the end of the year, play on special teams, but I don't think they're coming in unseating anyone because they have, you know, Cam Miller coming back, presumed starter. This is the
other
thing.
We can get into that. We can get into that. I wanted to pivot back to the receivers quick because this was off the top of my head. Tasir Denmark is somebody that they think is kind of one of those maybe undervalued or high ceiling guys in this class. And I agree with that because I remember when he was at Roman Catholic High School, he switched to Imhotep ahead of this year, his senior year. But I went to Roman Catholic to talk with him and Jameel Lyons last fall. And at the time I remember he went and was like, his coach handed him all these letters, right? Like, you know, physical mailings, a lot of letters from Oregon in there. I think he was even wearing a Ducks sweatshirt that day. Then he'd committed to Oregon like a week or two later, but really wasn't sure. Obviously, Penn State stayed on him the whole time. Now, this to me is an interesting one because, again, high upside, a lot of speed. You talk about the versatility piece. Like, there are skills there that I think Marcus Higgins is going to be able to do a lot with, right? Like, I do think that he's probably better than what his ranking suggests. So, but again, in terms of early impact, it's tough to, I think it'd really be tough to see that. Same with a Peter Gonzalez. Now,
Josiah Brown, obviously coming off the ACL injury, like
that's
stunned if he is anyone next year. Like, he just got to get healthy. Like, year one for him, I think, is about getting healthy. Like, right. It was for London Montgomery that we saw.
Yeah, and I think that's, and I know, you know, because we always typically we talk to the freshmen in the winter or the spring, and it's kind of like for a lot of guys, it's like, what was that redshirt year like? Because it is so different. They're used to playing and playing all the time, and then you go from that to redshirting and changing your body and all these changes and adjustments. So it is a lot. But to that cornerback room, John, I think it was, I don't know, maybe it was around 8 or 9 o'clock Wednesday morning. I'm like half asleep, kind of chugging my coffee, watching the live stream, taking notes. And then Terry Smith kind of, we talked last week on here about, you had said maybe there was some ambiguity with the receiving core and who's coming and going. James Franklin said they know that he didn't agree with your word choice. I think what happened,
which wasn't, by the way, it still wasn't the question. Like, it wasn't, it had nothing to do with receiving or whatever.
I think it's a good reminder that these decisions that players make about their futures, the coaching staff knows.
Yes.
But we're all kind of at, and I get it, we're at the player's mercy to, they're going to announce when they're going to announce.
Yes, that's fine.
But sometimes there's gaps between, I guess, what they think maybe we as reporters and people as fans know versus what's out there. So Terry Smith was talking to cornerback John Mitchell during his signing day live stream, and then I had to kind of do a double take.
Yeah, I was watching it on YouTube, so I rewound because I was like not sure that was what was said. But Terry Smith, Penn State cornerbacks coach and defensive recruiting coordinator, said that they're losing three cornerbacks to the NFL. They did not say anyone by name, but we know Johnny Dixon is out of eligibility. So there's one, right? And then when John Mitchell was talking to Brian Tripp, who's with, you know, with Penn State, like in their in-house show, he mentions that Kalen King's off to the NFL. So that's two. And then Daquan Hardy has a year left of eligibility.
If he wants that sixth year, right.
I'm not reporting anything, to be clear, but it seems to line up.
Yeah, three players. And then Terry Smith was then asked about it later in the day about what those three have meant. And he kind of reiterated again that they've been the cornerstone in that room and that, you know, not perhaps that Penn State maybe, and perhaps fans, but everyone kind of took for granted or got used to the fact that, yeah, they've had really good corners. And this has kind of been it. I think the thing to remember with Daquan Hardy, because I think that's the one that maybe some fans kind of think, I'm not quite sure. He's played a ton of snaps. He certainly helped himself with his special teams play this year as a punt returner. And there, again, we the versatility piece, like this is a guy who's going to intrigue some NFL teams. I was talking to Hardy about this potential at Bowl Media Day last Friday. And he had said, you know, he hasn't made up his mind. He's going to play in the bowl game, all that kind of stuff. But, you know, this is somebody who was offered and committed to Penn State a day before signing day back, you know, in his recruiting class. It was one of those of like, I remember it was like, okay, who is this kid? How did this happen? Oh yeah. He was high school teammates with Dante Cephas, but Penn State didn't want Dante then, your boy, cause he needed to kind of get in the weight room and develop some more at that point. Right. So again, good example of how things change over time. Right. But yeah, so to me, you're kind of looking at this restocked cornerback room potentially. And Terry Smith said later Wednesday that, yeah, there's going to be a lot on Cam Miller, which again, he's played a ton of snaps already. They're going to need him to step up. And he also said, yeah, the guys in this class, there's an opportunity, right? That was kind of Terry's message to John Mitchell of, hey, like John, there's a chance here. And Mitchell will get here this January. So again, he's kind of on the right path for that. We know that Penn State wants to play a lot of cornerbacks. They've consistently done that under Terry Smith. But yeah, that was like one of the most interesting little nuggets to come out of today.
Yeah. And you know, it goes hand in hand with what I was about to say too, about Belgrave Shorter and Mitchell, like high school teammates. And they may not be the highest rated kids in the class, but there's opportunity there. But there's also a pretty big class last year, Elliott Washington, Zion Tracy, most notably, that I would think are going to step in. Right. Yeah. And that's right now, that would be my expectation would be that Cam Miller's a starter pretty indisputably, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's sure. Unless something happens between now and August, that's going to be the case. And then you're looking at Tracy and Washington for the other spot, assuming that, that Hardy doesn't come back. And if Hardy doesn't come back, maybe the other one just plays the nickel. Although the way, and this, I mean,
well,
there's some national time-based stuff to talk about, but the way Tom Allen uses what he calls the Husky in his 4-2-5, because it's essentially 4-2-5.
We're going to have a lot of fun with that, aren't we?
By the way,
with that like, name.
Yeah. Like Penn State ran a 4-2-5 under Manny Diaz. You'd say, you know what I mean? Like occasionally they went base 4-3, mm-hmm. but most of the time they're in 4-2-5. Right. And so this is essentially the same system. He disguises coverages more. Tom Allen does, which I think is a notable difference. But I do think that Husky rule is usually huskier, right? it leans safety closer than corner or has in the past. Now, that's not to say he hasn't used corners in that role. He has. It's been, as I remember, I think it was like 3 or 4 years ago, Terry Smith said at a press conference that it doesn't matter who, like if that the fifth defensive back is a safety or corner, they're picking from wherever they have the best talent from, right? So it's like if they have three guys at safety they trust more, then that third guy's going to be a safety. If they have three guys at corner they trust more, than that third guy's going to be a corner. Under Diaz, that was a little more like base 4-2-5. It was a corner, like it wasn't a safety. But we saw with Brent Pry in the past that it was, and Bob Shoup too, that it was a mix, right? It was a safety corner hybrid. And I think this will look closer to that than a true nickel like under Manny Diaz with Daquan Hardy. Now, part of that too is Daquan Hardy's just really good. And so like that's what it's going to look like when Daquan Hardy's really good, despite the down 2022 that he had.
So essentially what you're telling me is in the spring is I need to say, hey, Tom, who's your Husky? And just
yes. Is this right the, into- Are we assuming we're going to get to talk to Tom again in the spring? Is that a...
Yeah, that's a big assumption on my part. I should make any assumptions.
Feels like it might be until June.
You know what they say about assumptions, John.
Yes, that's right. Let's take a brief break from the podcast. Talk about the good people over at Voodoo Brewing Company, located at 21 Elmwood Street in State College. A place that you and I visited last Friday, I think it was. Again, these days are blending together. Yes. We go in there. It's a nice environment for us to work, and everyone's very friendly. You know, you can sit down with your laptop, get your work done. You sit down, have good conversation, because we did that too, right? Like, it wasn't just working. We had good conversation with the good people there.
Good beverages.
Good beverages. Josh, Wes, Andy are all great. So is the rest of the staff at Voodoo. But, they have the Voodoo Kitchen there, which you and I both ate at, mentioned last time. You got a pizza. I got a chicken cheese
steak. Dill pickle pizza. Recommend.
Yes.
It's really good.
Yeah. Very good. And they serve us well there. And the food was great. They also have cider now, which is, as the weather's gotten a little bit cooler, that has replaced the slushies, which you love to see. Nice little hot drink for you on these cold winter days. You can sit outside by the fire pits. Always a good time. They have trivia Tuesday nights, bingo Thursday nights, both at 6 p.m. Really just a generally speaking, a great environment to go to. Those kind of Thursday and Tuesday nights give you something to like a kind of
the, get out of the house in the winter. Right?
Yeah. But I think it generally throughout the week, throughout like the days of the week, like you can always go there and find yourself a good time. So one of our favorite spots in State College, somewhere we've been going for a while, that's Voodoo Brewing Company in State College, located at 201 Elmwood Street. Back to the show.
But yeah, I mean, I do think you kind of look at the totality of this class. James Franklin said that they felt like they filled a lot of needs, but again, my ears kind of always perk up when you hear these things. We know what needs remain. And James Franklin even said offensive tackles, right? They're looking for body types. They can never have enough offensive tackles. That's something, whether through the second signing period or the transfer portal, that's certainly a priority. As is, as we know, as we've discussed on here several times before, wide receiver.
Several is not like it is way more than several. I don't know what,
as we discuss on here every episode.
Yes. There, that's more accurate.
The receiving corps needs some instant help. Nothing publicly, at least, has happened yet. We'll see. I mean, I'm hoping to log off here at the end of tonight and not open my computer to Tuesday, but we know that's never how this job works. Maybe I'll get lucky and it will. There also maybe are some stories perhaps pre-filed in this world of hypotheticals. Maybe we'll see.
I was going to say, I think a lot of us have written one specific story and wrote it the end of last week, right around there. Right?
Yeah. So again, we'll see what transpires there. But I do think, because we had a chance to talk to the recruiting coordinators who also, of course, double as the position coaches. So you and I were at Marcus Hagen's for, I was there the entire time.
I was there the entire time.
Yeah. And I thought we got into some interesting stuff. We got, through the signing day stuff. We talked already about Quentin Martin and kind of he had said similar things. So did Terry Smith about the receiving prospect there. I asked him about this here, Denmark, all this kind of stuff. And then we started asking about the receiving corps moving forward, right? Because, again, there's no on-site bowl media day for the Peach Bowl. So, we don't really know when we'll hear from some of these folks again, especially the position coaches. So that's something certainly to dive into. And I think it was you who asked about Amari Evans, because I wrote it on my notebook We were kind of like very middle school level passing notes. I was like, let's not forget that. It was good teamwork there.
You wrote Amari Evans and I wrote down in my horrible handwriting, I can't believe that you read it, but nodded.
Yeah, you read mine. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And said, I wrote down, asking about who stepped up in practice over the last couple of weeks. But asked about Amari Evans. And I think Marcus said a lot of what we've heard from a lot of coaches, right? Like the simplification and confidence helps a lot. Yeah. And that's big for Amari. But, he mentioned a bunch of guys that have stepped up recently. Caden Saunders, though, I think, and I don't want to read too much into, I don't want to attribute something to Marcus that he didn't say. But when people tend to list things, right, like, and they, the first thing that comes to mind, to me, that's the thing standing out the most, right? Like that, it's a logic, train there that makes sense. And Caden Saunders was the first player he mentioned when I asked about, who's stepping up. So Guys like Amari Evans and Caden Saunders stepping up, it would be enormous for Penn State, right? Because they need depth next year. Trey Wallace, we assume, will be back. We have no reason to believe that he won't be.
Yeah, he was asked about that. Again, the big thing there is the injury, right? Like,
yes,
we haven't seen him for weeks.
But James said they hope to have him at Michigan State, and I would think that means he's going to play against Ole Miss, right? If it's a month after that, like,
he wasn't at practice, I don't believe, when we were there last week. But again, that was 15 not. Minutes. You know, a lot can happen between now and then. Maybe he was in the bathroom.
First time. It wouldn't be as, yeah. It wouldn't be the first time that they've done some obfuscation. I've struggled with that word all day.
It's a big word.
I know. I keep using it and I don't know why. It wouldn't be the first time they've done that over the 5 years that I've been here. But no, I think, you know, either way, next year, you know, Trey Wallace will be back. You know, Dante Cephas will in all likelihood be back.
I was going to say, the way they talked today certainly sounded like he's going to be here. Yeah. We don't know about
Keandre Lambert Smith, despite, like, God forbid.
No ambiguity there.
Ambiguity there. But I, you know, we don't know his status yet. He hasn't announced a decision. But, you know, so that could go either way. But having guys step up behind them, even if Lambert Smith comes back, doesn't come back, what have you, having Caden Saunders step up, having Amari Evans step up, that would be enormous, because then if you add someone from the portal that's, you know, maybe was a high-end talent, is a solid receiver with some upside, that has been in a big-time program, who's a really good blocker, like, that's the kind of addition you'd want to make. I don't know.
Who would that be,
John? That feels like the kind of guy that you'd want to add. I think, you know, I asked Marcus today, too, about, like, what a hypothetical portal receiver would look like, and he mentioned that they want, like, they want someone that's going to elevate the competition level, elevate the consistency, mm-hmm. essentially. A pretty generic answer, which is fine. But mentioned, like, the advantage of getting older guys, mm-hmm. right, and leadership. I think you asked about that specifically. And he mentioned that there's a big advantage to getting those older guys that can kind of set the tone with their consistency.
Guys who can be
no one in particular coming to mind that we're referring to.
That's the other thing, right? He hit on the January piece, which, because somebody asked him, I don't remember if it was you, me, somebody else in the scrum, about basically what did you learn? It was probably you, because it was about Dante Cephas. What did you learn about going through this process?
I asked about Cephas, and then Greg Pickle asked about what he would have done differently. Yeah. Like, what you would learn and what you would have done differently. And then Marcus just said, would have had him here in January.
And that's, I think, I mean, that's an honest answer. And that's the thing that you and I talked and we wrote about all off season. And you could, I mean, I think fans could physically see the transformation, right? Like, you point back to that Maryland game when things started to come together for Cephas. Like, there was a transition. It was a little bit surprising, I think, for some people. And we went to those practices and, in the preseason, and it's like, well, why isn't Cephas with the ones? And it's like, well, this is going to take some time. Yeah, like, the guy just unloaded his bags, you know, give him a minute. But so again, this time around, you want to try to avoid that if you can. Now, obviously, you know, there's situations where you can't avoid that. And that was, you know, Cephas' situation. But if you can avoid that, you want to get them there in January. So as we talk here on Wednesday, December 20th, that's where the receiving corps stands. We'll see if anything changes in the next week, in the next 2 weeks.
I just know it's going to happen on when, like, it's going to either be Christmas Day, Eagles games going on.
Oh, yeah.
Or on a flight. Like, that's it. That's when things
happen. Yeah, Tuesday. Tuesday's going to be everybody hunker down Tuesday. That will be in the air.
Prepare all of your breaking news for, like, I think my flight leaves at, like, 2:30, something like that. That's when it'll all come out. I'm certain of that.
We say that and then watch, it'll be like whatever. I mean, that's the crazy honestly, part about this.
This feels like something that could drag out too.
Semester starts the 7th of January, I believe, whatever that Monday is.
Yeah, so there's real time to make a decision. So like, that's 18 days away. That this decision does not have to come down this week or next week. Can wait.
Doesn't have to happen on Christmas. I'm just saying.
And by the way, people don't have to announce decisions, right? Like, they can do what they want. And handle things how they want.
But, actually, I'm just thinking out loud here. How wild would that be, right? Say a receiver, big time, high profile receiver commits here. But, and again, I am just pontificating here. Like, doesn't announce anything and just, like, gets here.
Shows up.
It's just such a foreign concept in this day and age of college football. Again, if anybody was following, and I'm sure many people were, kind of the sagas around the country today of, did we get this letter? Has this guy woken up yet? I mean, the drama in this sport is unparalleled. And while Penn State had a drama-free signing day, please recognize that that is not the case everywhere in the country.
Did you see the Ryan Day reaction video?
No.
There's a him reacting to, I think it was Jeremiah Smith, mm-hmm. who's the top player in the country, top receiver in the country. He's an incredible recruit. Is very likely to be very good. And I think he announced for Ohio State around noon, somewhere around mm-hmm. there. And after and Ryan Day like was in a presser or something though, and he was like super relieved. Like he was just like, you know what I mean? Like you could see the look in his face of the stress leaving his face. But like you said, the last I had read, they still don't have the letter of intent, and Penn State has none of that issue.
Yeah, I mean, they're the high stakes drama that unfolds, and you know, you used to kind of see a little bit more of it, and you do to some extent, but with players and picking hats, and then you've got moms and dads and family members and supporters being like, what, they did this, like the genuine surprise
that used to be more fun, by the way. I know fans probably thought it was stressful. I think it was more fun. That was the thing more.
I know, and even talking to, you know, recruits over time, the crystal ball era has changed things, right? Like there's not,
yeah.
It's like, hey, this guy's crystal ball says this, right? And you kind of expect that's what's going to happen, right? Like the whole process has changed.
I think the last time people were genuinely shocked was when Travis Hunter flipped to Jackson State.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Like yeah.
If I remember correctly, he was committed to Florida mm-hmm. State, like that was out of nowhere. And I think, like, you know, you're right. The crystal ball stuff has kind of ruined all of the suspense, really. Like everyone knows which way guys are leaning, and usually, like it. Even if it doesn't come out like a day in advance, it comes out like 10 minutes before, you know what I mean? Like someone is hinted at something somewhere that a kid's committing. So that does, I think, take some of the fun out of it, which is unfortunate. Because like you said, these kids used to have a lot of fun with these commitments and like the things they would do. But it seems we are long past those days.
Well, and I think with
the transfer portal now, there's no like announcement ceremonies, and everyone can like you see this, not to go on a too long of a tangent, but Dylan Raiola, who committed to Nebraska,
the Huskies,
committed to Georgia, the Huskers.
We're getting close, yeah.
Yeah, close enough. But no, he committed to Nebraska after he was committed for a long time to Georgia. Obviously, his dad played at Nebraska, was a legendary offensive lineman. But like this was something that was reported on for like a week in advance. But the thing is, and I'm not, to be clear, I am not saying this is going to happen. I don't even think this is going to happen. But to go into the world of hypotheticals, the reason that stuff like that is going to happen more and that makes more sense is because let's say he goes to Nebraska and he has a lot of success, but the team doesn't have a lot of success. He can leave and then he can go to Georgia. He can go to Ohio State. He can go to, you know what I mean? Like he can have his
Oregon.
Choice in these places. Yeah, or he can go to these places that he wants to go.
He can get the Bo Nix treatment. He can get the Michael Penix treatment, right? Like,
right. If I'm a quarterback, there is no incentive for me to go somewhere and sit as long as, and this is important, there's maybe a less prestigious school or less like playoff contendery school that I am confident that I can get developed at, you know what I mean, by that coaching staff and can get the playing time too to then make that leap if I want to make that leap down the road. Because you can treat it like I want to play and I know that it'll help me get better if I play. So I'll go to, I don't want to keep picking on Nebraska. Go to Purdue, right? You go to Purdue, you start Boiler for a year, up. And then you move on to another school if you're playing so well and the team's not doing well, it's not elevating the whole program. Like you're going to have that option now, which I think for if quarterbacks especially, it makes less and less sense to go somewhere and sit unless you are so set on one. Moving sucks. Like so I would totally not understand honestly, wanting to do that. It's a great reason to not transfer.
That is an underrated, I think, part of all of this.
Listen, Shohei Ohtani signed with the Dodgers because he didn't want to move. Like, I don't, that's not true, but it's also definitely at least a little true. With the moving stuff real quick, like mm-hmm. moving sucks is a reason to not want to move somewhere else or like, you don't like you're committed to that school and that coach and that's you have so much trust that they'll get you where you need to go that you don't have to worry about the other stuff.
Yeah. I'm a sucker for logistics. That's kind of my thing. Right. I was talking to somebody about that. I think it was a parents. Yeah, it was one of the commits' parents that we were talking about this and kind of the craziness in the sport and all the movement and that type of thing. And one, I would love to see some of these transcripts, right, for guys who have transferred multiple times. It's like, bless the people dealing with these transcripts because it's going to be an absolute nightmare, right? And like,
well, we know Penn State's not great with that.
Well, James Franklin did shout out the board today for getting together the subcommittee on compensation, got a shout out, which was not on my bingo card for today.
He shouted out the board, not the admissions office, though.
Yeah. Well, the process, right? There are admission standards, there's processes to all of these things. But you have that, but then the moving piece, right? And it's like, okay, you're packing up your life, and I get it, you're in college, you don't have a lot of stuff. But I think even for coaches, right, you're going in, you're moving around, all this types of stuff. Like, moving is a massive pain in the ass. Like, that is...
Yeah. Coaches can get movers, though. Like, I
can't... That's true. They're not like us, John. I think, you know what today reiterated more than anything? People What's we that? Cover are nothing like us.
Yeah.
That's what, I say like, that
well, the next
Tom
time
Allen and his buyout, which we will get into in a second.
Yeah, but the next time I move, I am getting movers, and I do not care. Like, it sucks. I hate it. I hate moving. It's a nightmare always.
I closed on my house 4 years ago, John, and you know what my lasting memory is? And I'm sitting here in my office. I'm looking at the staircase. I, like, barely had, you know, internet, and that those new house was built. I look, and I get a text to my editor, like, knew I was moving. Jared Parker had just left that day. And I was like,
nice.
Well, here we go. Some coaching news. And I was like, I don't even remember if I dealt with it or what we did. But again, that kind of the James Franklin coaching tree, that tells you how long ago that was, 4 years ago. Times have changed. But the coaching tree, the movement, is it time to talk about Tom Allen? Is it the time?
Yeah. I think this is a, I don't know. It's really weird. I've seen a lot of consternation about this hire.
Really?
I kind of think that James nailed it with both him and Andy Kotelnicki. Mm-hmm. Tom Allen is, I covered him for, I don't know, 10 months, something like that. When I was
covering Indiana. Was it the best 10 months of your life covering him? No.
Covering Tom?
Yeah, well, what were your thoughts about covering Tom? What was
Tom? I had no issue covering Tom. Tom was great. He was always nice. He was always kind, which, I mean, I've said since I started to hear his name surface that, you know, that I always thought that Tom was a very, very kind man.
You liked his positivity.
Yeah, I'm a bit of a curmudgeon sometimes, but I don't mind when other people are positive like that.
Mm-hmm.
But the rest of the job was not, like, it was less than ideal. But no.
Well, brush over that part.
Aspect, yeah. the Tom Allen aspect, Kalen DeBoer was there. Michael Penix was there. Like, that was a fun team to cover for those few months that I did. But Tom was always, like, incredibly kind. Right. And I always remember that. And it was funny being in that press conference today is like a flashback. Like, Greg Kincaid, who works in Penn State StratCom, the SID, was also at Indiana when Tom was there. So, like, being in the, you know what I mean? Being in this press conference.
Pick up the same room, put it in Beaver Stadium.
Yeah, being at that press conference with Tom there, like, it was a little bit of a flashback.
Yeah, my impression of him today was the positivity. You know, I know he always kind of gets compared to, and we talked about this with Andy last week, the Ted Lasso kind of positive vibes, good vibes, like, there's a chance, and again, we'll see what happens on the field. We've got a ways to go till we get to that point. I'm just a little worried that, like, the next time we're in the Lash building, every single wall is going to be covered with a slogan.
Yeah.
Like, it just seems like, I mean, what, the thing today was it's...
Tom's thing is LEO.
Not me and...
Tom does LEO, which is love each other. That was this whole thing in Indiana. Oh. But no,
are they going to be getting Leo, like, wristbands, t-shirts? Like, what's the extent of this?
No idea. I have no idea if he's going to be bringing the catchphrases with him from Bloomington. But I do think, like, it's a really good hire, though. Mm-hmm. I think the energy, like, he's replacing some of the energy lost from Manny Diaz, even if it kind of manifests itself in different ways. I wrote about that. You can read it at SenderDaily.com.
That's a good point. I like that. Yeah, I like that.
But, like, it's the same, it is the same level of energy, right? It just looks different. Mm-hmm. I think schematically, though, this was something that I think they crushed it, right? Like, James disagreed with me clearly and said that they wanted four down linemen. They wanted a four front, as Pat Kraft told us today when he spoke, that was one of the things that they were looking for. And then Pat said that this was he was probably giving away too much information when he said that. But I do think that, you know, I mentioned earlier, they run a 4-2-5. They have a Husky as the fifth defensive back. That's usually a bigger defensive back. But it's
not the actual dog, to be clear.
Yes, which you would hate because you hate all dogs. And you are wrong about this.
I do not.
It's your worst take. It's just incorrect. I think that's the biggest problem with it. But he runs that same type of scheme. It's just, I don't want to get too into the X's and O's here. I don't want to bore people. I know some people might not be interested in that. If you are interested in that, let us know. We can spend, like, I don't know about you, Audrey.
We've got all record, season.
Yeah, we'll spend some time like breaking down some stuff, because I'll be watching the All-22 of Tom again, which fortunately is less extensive because I've seen it before a lot. But he uses more disguises in the back end, right? Like, there's more ambiguity as to what they're doing pre-snap. Like, it's confusing.
That word again.
Yes. It's a good word. What do you want? But there's more disguise to what they're doing. You saw that Kyle McCord, specifically in the Ohio State game, was able to. Kyle McCord, specifically as a quarterback, is someone that pre-snap, if he sees what he needs to see, he knows where to go, right? But if things change post-snap, then it gets a little bit messier, right? Like, things get a little more difficult for him. Tom Allen is going to present disguises, and he's going to present quarterbacks challenges that they have to solve post-snap. And that is much more taxing on a quarterback in the college level than it is the NFL level. Coverage disguises are still very much a thing in the NFL. Vic Fangio, Dolphins defensive coordinator, is like legendary for the fact that everything is disguised constantly. But I think it's even more valuable in college, as long as your guys understand it, right? As long as they know where they're going, where they need to be, and they can recover where they need to recover to, and what have you. But I do think this is the kind of hire that you make when you want to make the playoff, right? Like, they have a guy who was a head coach for 7 years. I saw people saying stuff about him not being a defensive coordinator. I really like James's answer to that question today about,
are you just saying that because it was your question? Is that what this is, John?
I said, I like the answer, not the question. The question, whatever. I'm doing what I can as the only one. As the only one asking the Tom Allen question out there. I'm trying to get what I can, but
the setup is not ideal.
No, it wasn't.
No, I, the thing that, while we're talking about kind of catchphrases and his defense, pop quiz, John, you've seen it before. I don't know if you've heard this one before. What's the DNA to a Tom Allen defense? You failed the
turnovers.
Quiz.
No, takeaways, tackling, and energy, right?
Effort. Close. Takeaways, effort. Tackling, close. Effort.
I knew it was an E. Same idea.
TTE. Is there anything to that? Is that going to get slapped on a t-shirt or a wristband?
No, he'll say stuff like that, but it's the only catchphrase really is the LEO thing, the love each other, which was a big deal in their 2020 season, which was a great season, which he doubled down. And listen, I don't want to make people mad, but so, that was a good 2-point conversion. Michael Penix did get in the end zone.
I was there covering that game, and that, of course, you know, I'm sure Penn State fans, you remember it vividly, but it was the first game of the 2020 delayed season. Very surreal even when you think about it now. I mean, I was sitting in the press box. Literally, my seat was surrounded by plexiglass. I drove out to Bloomington. It was like one of the only times I could actually stay, you know, in Bloomington. Got Mother Bear's pizza delivered to my room, or take out to my room.
I love Mother Bear's. It is
fantastic pizza.
I think it's my favorite pizza place in the world.
There's a place in Atlanta.
We'll find out this coming week.
Antico's really good.
I think those 10 months I ate Mother Bear's like 45 times. It was something absurd. Like, I was constantly when I go back, I go to Mother Bear's.
I didn't go last year to the Bloomington game, and that was like my one big regret. It wasn't not covering the game. It was I couldn't get Mother Bear's. But yeah, kind of peak COVID season, eating pizza and drinking whiskey in my hotel room alone in Bloomington. That was a highlight. But going to the game, and then, you know, you watch the play. I'm with you. I thought it was a successful conversion. I look at it now. I still can see it that way. Tom Allen said he still sees it that way, but did acknowledge it depends kind of which lens you're looking at, which sideline you were on. He did say he had a big photo of the 2-point conversion that he used to have in his office. Unclear if that photo is making the trip, but I think it's safe to say that will not be in his office in Penn State.
I want to know whose photo it is, though, right? Because our wonderful photographer, Abby Dry of Santa Daily Times, took a great photo and won awards for that photo of it looks like, you know, I have it pulled up here. You can't really tell. It's just a great photo. I think he's in from it. That's the photo that a lot of people cite, though, when they say that he's not in. But it's a great photo regardless.
Tremendous photo.
But I wonder, you know what I mean? Like, which one he has of that play.
Maybe we'll find out. Maybe one day.
Yeah, something worth asking about. But I do think from a schematic standpoint that he's going to put them in a position to succeed. And the downside that I think people usually see in head coaches is, or a head coach becoming a coordinator is like they're biding time until they get the next job. Listen, I don't want to read too much into an introductory press conference, but man, it did not sound like a guy who wants to be a head coach again. He sounded like a guy who was sick of it, like wants to just talk ball all the time.
Yes, I very much got, again, first impression. So who knows, but I very much came away with the impression of like, I'm happy to be here. I'm really elated to be the linebackers coach at Linebacker U. Happy to have all the head coaching stuff off of my plate and just to be a position coach and a coordinator again.
He said it several times.
Yeah. And that was, he said, James Franklin, throughout the interview process, both sides were really upfront with what they were looking for. And they wanted to make sure that, Tom Allen was kind of on board with, hey, what are your non-negotiables in terms of what are the tenets of your defense and how do you need to, to make that work, just to make sure everybody's on the same page, which again is the right thing to do. And so I'm with you. Like he said, he's not focused on, parlaying this into springboarding this into a head coaching job again. We'll see, things change, goals change, ambitions change. I get that. But yeah, he didn't kind of come in where Manny Diaz, I think it was more upfront with it off the bat. But he did, Tom Allen, almost did it. Almost called him the wrong name. Almost called him Tim. Tom Allen did say that he met with Abdul Carter briefly on Wednesday, that Abdul was in the weight room. So, he had a chance to talk with him and said basically something along the lines of, yes, I remember you gave us a lot of trouble before. Like, I can't wait to coach you type of thing. So, Tom Allen's going to be at the bowl site watching practices. He said he wants to observe not only how the players practice, but how they communicate and how they are in the meeting rooms, how they interact with the other assistant coaches, right? Which I think sets up a bit of an interesting dynamic for this week in Atlanta, because it certainly feels like everything's under the microscope. And I want to ask, the players when we're there about that, because, we always hear the bowl game is obviously it's a big game. It's an important game, especially when it's a New Year's Six game, but it's supposed to be, you're there for about a week. It's a celebration of the season. There's all these quirky activities, usually all that stuff. But it sure seems like to me, just because of the current setup, that everything and everyone's being evaluated. And it's kind of maybe hard to enjoy yourself in that setting. Although, what do they say? Pressure makes pipes or diamonds or some burst pipes or make diamonds. Have you ever heard that?
Pressure bursts pipes and makes diamonds.
Yeah,
that's I don't know what the hell that was, but I did enjoy it.
You didn't know that? I'm gonna get that printed on a t-shirt. If we're gonna go all love each other, if we're gonna go all I'm gonna get a diamond on a t-shirt or something. I don't know.
I do think though, and this was with Kodwinicki especially, who's really good at disconnecting, that they'll probably be able to not care about that stuff when they're not, in practice, in meetings and stuff.
Yeah. I think it's coming from a good place. I think for the players, it's kind of like everybody's trying to get to, not everybody, but a lot of people are trying to get to know each other.
It can be awkward, I think, for sure. But I do think and we heard Tom emphasize this today, he said that he emphasizes relationships, right? And he really cares about relationships. Yeah. And again, I covered him before. I know a bunch of people that covered him. I have a lot of friends that cover Indiana and everything. That is without a doubt true, right? He really cares about the humanity aspect of coaching. We heard about Andy Kodonicki talk about the teaching aspect and the humanity aspect. Tom Allen also very much cares about the humanity and the teaching. He was a high school coach and high school teacher for a long time in Florida, in Indiana, right? He was he was a head coach at Indianapolis, Ben Davis, which is a big school out in Indianapolis, like before he moved up into the college ranks and everything. And in fact, I don't know if a lot of people know this. You know, he's only been a Division I coordinator for 2 years, right? Like he was a D1 coordinator at South Florida for a year and at Indiana for a year, and that's it. And then he got the Indiana job and been doing that ever since. So that's one of the reasons I asked James about that track record thing today too, because it's not just that it's 7 years ago, it's that it's smaller than you would think. Now, he was good as an Ole Miss linebackers coach, like, right. And he's had success. He put up a decent season at South Florida, and they had a phenomenal season at Indiana. I think they were 20th, if I remember correctly, in SB Plus on defense, and his 1 year as defensive coordinator.
And Franklin pointed to the most improved, right? Yes. That was kind of the point.
And the other thing is, I've seen a lot of consternation over the fact that they maybe haven't been good defensively over the last 7 years. I can't stress enough how difficult it is to be the head coach and to be the defensive coordinator in college specifically. Mm-hmm. It is impossible. There are coaches that can call an offense, but even I think you will find that their staffs are filled with guys that are really throughout the week running the offense, right? And then they're calling the plays, right? So I think there's reason to give him some slack, essentially, for how Indiana's defense played over the years. He's had some really good defensive coordinators. Kane Womack stands out, who's at South Alabama now as the head coach and has had success there. Some guys who haven't worked out. But, like, I do think that he is going to be a positive impact, even if there isn't the same level of defense being played next year because they're going to lose talent. Like, we know that.
Right.
His job is to maximize what's there. But I also don't think this has to be, I don't know where they're at in SP Plus right now. I know they're top 10, but I don't think it has to be as high as it is now for him to be deemed a success in year one. I think we will figure out how successful he can be at Penn State based on what they do on the field. And it's going to be tough to judge it based off the year to year numbers, just because, as James Franklin said, and as you asked Tom about today, like, they're the number one defense in total defense, which is not a metric that I use a ton, but like, they're the number one defense in total defense. You literally can't improve off of that particular stat.
Yeah, and I think to me, it's like you look at, like, I think it's a good point, and I know you and I have talked about it on here before too, right? Like, how do you maximize and uplift this defense when Chop Robinson, we know for sure, isn't going to be here? There's other decisions that haven't been made public yet, but we talked about the cornerback room, right? The changes there. Like, you still have the bones and the structure in place to have a very, very good defense, but it's going to look a little bit different, and there's going to be some growing pains. And I think the point Terry Smith made today about the corners was a really good one, is because you look at it and you're like, yeah, I mean, you're right. Like, people have been spoiled by the play of the corners. And I know some people want to nitpick and Joey Porter, and he was too hands-on and those types of things, right? Like, people are always going to have their nits to pick and those types of things.
I won't do it, even though I want to.
Hold back, John, hold back. The thing that you and I can pick apart here that I think just is a very good reminder of, like, the differences in professions of the people that we cover, right? And kind of the interesting part of this, Tom Allen's buyout at Indiana, right? $15.5 million.
Well, and it was,
he didn't need to coach college football. He didn't need to do anything.
It was also negotiated down, by the
right.
way.
Like, it was 20.8, something like that.
He negotiated it down in one of the stipulations that there's no offsets in the contract. So essentially any money he makes at Penn State is new money and is not just taken away from the Indiana money, which is different than how Manny Diaz's contract was when he was at Penn State. And I reported on Tuesday. I don't know what day of the week
it Tuesday.
Is.
Tuesday.
That he will be making $1.5 million in the first year of his contract, $1.6 million, and then $1.7 million, which is $0.1 million less than Andy Kotelnicki will be making all three of those years. Kind of makes sense.
And Andy's is a four-year deal, right?
Yes, and in year four for Andy, he'll make $2 million, as you and I both reported. Penn State, for what it's worth, does not release those contract numbers. We reached out to them because there's been stuff in the legislature, whatever, I won't bore everyone with the details. Essentially, Penn State as a university is going to have to release more financial data. Evidently, this still does not fall under the purview. So we had to do the work to find it out and get that information and report it to the listeners and our readers. But that information is out there now. And, you know, the Allen salary being a little bit less than Kotelnicki makes sense, given that they were not competing with anyone for him, right? Like Kotelnicki, Kansas was trying to keep Kotelnicki. They were making him
had a great situation. Offers. Yeah.
Yes, he's in a good situation. They're making him great offers to stay. And Penn State is trying to pry him away. Whereas with Tom Allen, he's available. He's not working anywhere. As he said, James Franklin reached out to him first. And like, you know, he said how grateful he is for the opportunity today, like, and that he's excited for this. And you can tell he's excited for this. But like, this is, you know, this was a timeline that didn't have to be as rushed. Cause as James put it, there was nobody on the other end trying to keep Tom away from him. Right. With Andy, Kansas is trying to keep you. So you have to like try and expedite it. And so I assume this negotiation process was smoother. That being said, you don't want to underpay him because you want, like, he needs to make around what Kotelnicki does, because otherwise it's just a bad look, right? Like, it's like it's a respect thing, I think. And so that makes sense why they're not paying him nothing.
If you had the opportunity to make $15.5 million to not work, what would you do?
I think you're going to say I'm insane for this. I would probably keep writing. I would find something to cover. I don't know if it would be, I mean, honestly, it might be.
No, but for real.
I love what I do. And I was not going to say I like what I do, but I genuinely love what I do. And I've said this to a lot of people. I'll be doing this till I die. I accept that.
Preferably like, not the Nittany Dispatch podcast. We're going to have to wheel them out of here one day. Yeah.
But this job's a lot of fun. This podcast is a lot of fun. I really appreciate everyone who listens and watches. And
You're going to make me sound like an asshole.
Well, no, I was going to say, I think I can speak for you too in saying that like we both do appreciate all that. But no, I got into journalism. We're at minute 55. If you're still here, thank you. I deeply appreciate that. But if this is about to go further off the rails, I'm sorry. But you know, I got into journalism because it's fun, right? Like, because I love sports and, you know, those things. So like, I honestly, and that's why when he made that decision to get back into coaching, despite being paid $15.5 million, like, I mean, on a very different scale, I get it. Right? Like, when I was looking for a job, I was just like bored. Right. Like I like the work. Listen, we work a lot. We work very long hours. But I also wouldn't trade it for anything. Like I enjoyed a lot. So this is, despite if someone offered me $15.5 million to leave this job, I would probably just find a similar one and keep making the $15.5 million job. Yeah.
No, I think you could find me on a beach drinking, having a good time. But don't worry, John, I would still come on to talk Penn State football and for all of our good friends here at the Nittany Dispatch. No, I mean, I think to me, that's again, like he's and the way he kind of said it, it was kind of like, this was a no brainer. Like, I'm a football coach. This is what I do.
Yes.
You know, obviously that's so much of his identity as a person, you know, more than an occupation. Cause obviously we can complain about our hours. Their hours are nuts.
The identity aspect, it's not just as a coach though, and these guys view themselves this way, and I think correctly for the most part, specifically with Kotelnicki and Allen, like they view themselves as teachers, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and as someone who helps people grow, and like I think that is a large part of the joy. You could tell with Kotelnicki that was like a major thing with him, that he really enjoys teaching, and I think that is, it's not just like their identity isn't just coaching, it's like helping people develop.
You keep making me sound worse and worse, John, because I do teach. That is my other job, and I would walk away from that too. So I am nothing like the people I cover, apparently.
Listen, eventually me having a master's degree, eventually me having a master's degree will lead me to teaching, and then I'll want to not do that anymore. So
I get the, in all seriousness, like teaching is a lot of fun. And you learn what people know and what they don't know. And I was a double major in journalism and secondary ed. And you kind of, there's value, there's benefit, there's enjoyment in that. There are also other days where you're like, man, this can be a lot of great papers. But right now it's great because Penn State already had their finals week last week. So I was able to kind of breeze through our jam-packed signing day because of that. And then we got the bowl trip coming up, John.
Yep.
Big old bowl trip. Five days away. We got Christmas in between. Like I said, I am hoping to unplug, disconnect, hang out. Hopefully there's no news. We'll see.
There is a Penn State men's basketball game Thursday night, which I will be covering. So not
Thursday
quite.
Thursday night, and though, that's...
Yeah, but there's a lot of pre-writing that I want to do because and again, we're just off the rails at this point. But like when we get down to these bull trips, I like to just enjoy myself, right? Like we have our availability.
What does that look like, John?
You know what it looks like. We have these availabilities usually earlier in the day, and like mm-hmm. I want to get through those and I want to write off of those and I want to have all my other stuff kind of taken care of, right? And so I want to be able to enjoy wherever we're at. Last year was Los Angeles, this year, you know, being Atlanta, or just enjoy like the fact that we're all there, like we're all in the same place for a week. I think
bowl trips are fun.
The pretty much the entire beat goes and all of us get along, we all hang out with each other. You and I doing this podcast is not like the only friendship on the beat. Like everyone gets along with each other. We shout out a lot of people a lot of time on here for you know, a reason. Like we think highly of them. This is a good chance to go down and hang out with them and everything too. So I'll be writing regrettably on Friday and probably I'll do some early Christmas with my family on Saturday. And then the Christmas Eve, I'll probably be writing a little more and hopefully I'll have it done so I can enjoy the Christmas day and enjoy the Eagles trying to break my spirit.
The old NFL Sunday Christmas Eve is interesting. Christmas Day games. We got the Saturday games now again as of last week, so it's all spread out. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a fun trip. We'll have a podcast at some point before the game from down there. Yes.
If other stuff happens, we will podcast then too.
Christmas. That's my only stipulation, John. But for $15.5 million, I would podcast on Christmas.
I would probably podcast on Christmas anyway. Come on, whatever. I'm not doing much.
I think that
the beauty of leaving the day after Christmas is that I am like, and I appreciate my family acquiescing to me. Like, I don't want to do anything on Christmas Day because it's like we're gonna leave the next day. It's gonna be a long week. So I just want to relax and, you know, get the Christmas stuff out of the way early.
Wow. That's your holiday spirit, John. Just get it out of the way early.
No, it's not get it out of the way early. It's enjoy it early. There you go.
No, it'll be nice.
Makes me look bad one last time.
Just back over me with the bus today, John. Happy holidays. It'll be fun. I'll go home, see my parents, see my niece and nephew, who I'm sure will be very energetic. They're little, so that'll be fun. I will head down Tuesday. James Franklin has a Zoom on Tuesday. We're getting coordinators Wednesday, Thursday, which I guess will be the co-interim coordinators and some players. So we will have plenty of stuff to be churning out at our respective websites. Again, if there are opt-outs, or if there are any more draft decisions, we will get those to you as quickly as humanly possible. But if you are listening to this, maybe you are traveling for the holidays, or maybe you are putting the end to your work week as well, like I am, I think. Have a wonderful holiday season. We appreciate you guys listening and being here. This is, you know, been a fun project this year. We've kind of just launched this thing and just we're winging it as we go. So it's been really nice to hear from a lot of you, and a lot of you have asked us, you know, when are you going to record, or we enjoy the show. So it really, really means a lot. Cause again, we are here to bring you closer to the team and the program that you care about. Like, that's our goal. We'll be continuing to do that all bowl week, all off season as well. John, anything we didn't even talk about, we can briefly talk about Pat Kraft, the athletic director, talked today, Beaver Stadium. They're 30%
of the way through the design. It's going to be a while.
It's going to be a while. Yeah.
Yeah. There's not a ton to say there. Pat, like you said, spoke today. There was discussions about like some of the construction mm-hmm. stuff. The second floor of the Lash building is currently under construction or about to go under construction. I think it was how he phrased it.
Yeah.
He mentioned a really interesting tampering story where they were on their way to, or they might have been in Vegas already for Olu Fashanu's Campbell Trophy, nomination stuff. And an agent reached out to them with a list of like 8 players that asking if they were interested in them. And one of them was a Penn State player, which is fire that agent.
Unnamed Penn State player. Yeah.
Yeah. Whoever that player is, that needs to fire that agent. Like, that is not good. But no, I think, you know, Pat spoke for a while today, but there's sometimes, you know, with the athletic director, there's just not like a ton to touch on when there's not a ton of stuff going on.
It's almost like a bill becoming a law, right? Where there's all these incremental things that happen.
Yeah. Some status updates. Beaver
Stadium's, yeah, always the big one. But yeah, that tampering story was really interesting. That's something that James Franklin spoke about last week as well. Tampering in the portal is out there. It's rampant, but how do you fix it, right? And that's kind of the thing that everyone has to figure out here. And that I can certainly say, John, figuring out and fixing portal tampering, that's above our pay grade.
That's actually not my job.
Yeah. I mean, we'll have to write about it and think about it, but that is actually fixing it is not us.
Yes, it is not my problem, and I do not plan to make it my problem. But no, I think that's really the gist of it from Kraft today. There wasn't a ton. But as you said, you know, wish everyone listening, watching, happy holidays, whatever you celebrate. Enjoy yourself. Enjoy your time with your family. You know, this is it's a weird time of the year because like the season's ending, but it's also like our busiest time. So like you said, we will have stuff on our respective websites, you over at theathletic.com, me at sendaily.com. Audrey will be tweeting her stuff at oddsnyder4, and I will do the same at John Sauber. Again, no H in John. There's never been an H in John, despite some people replying to me in emails and throwing it in there, and my signature not having one.
So you got my email.
The original email out. Yeah, I do, Audrey, all the time. But no, I you know, like you said, appreciate everyone. You know, this has been a lot of fun. Please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts. Those 5-star reviews really help. The thumbs up down below on YouTube and the subscribe button really help us there. But I think that is a good place to end it. And like Audrey said, we will be back when stuff happens. We will be back during Bull Week and, you know, for the foreseeable future. So thank you for tuning in. Have a great day.